Hello, welcome to the Adam Fitch podcast. I'm your tired and particularly busy host, Adam Fitch. It's been an absolute mental week today. I'm joined by Tia Smith, the esports account manager at Gungum, or is it Gungum Sports? How am I referring to the company there?
It's like Gungum Sports. And hey, Adam, thank you for having me on.
No, of course. So I guess that the first thing to do for people listening what would be helpful is if you could just kind of explain what you do kind of day to day and what's Gungum Sports' involvement in the esports industry, because you'll explain it a lot better than I can.
Of course, yeah, thank you. So I'm an account manager at Gungum Sports, and then Gungum Sports really our technology is focused on tracking and measuring sports sponsorship logos and images in sports broadcasts, streams, and social media. So as an account manager, I'm actually focused on managing all of our esports clients. And then those clients range from esports teams to brands, tournament organizers, and even more. So I've had a little bit of experience managing in the traditional sports side, esports. So we really work in a 360 degree view of the esports industry.
Okay, that's really interesting. I don't think many companies actually do that within esports. So I've also noticed that you're becoming quite the public speaker. I don't know if that's as of late or if it's always been a thing, but I've kind of noticed it recently. So how's that kind of come about, and what kind of things do you talk about with it within the panels and such that you're a part of?
Totally, yeah. So I personally love public speaking. I actually grew up doing it as part of 4-H for any of you kind of agricultural kids out there. So definitely different realm from esports, but I really see going out and speaking as a great way, A, for Gungum to sort of make our mark in the industry, just because we're a new player in what we do. And then also for myself to challenge myself. And then, speaking to groups of people and teaching is honestly really fun for me. So just recently, actually yesterday, we had a student group visiting from the University of Michigan, their Sports Business Association. Okay. I got to teach them about esports a little bit and what we do. And then besides that, I've gotten to speak at UCLA, UC Irvine here recently. I spoke at the Washington University in St. Louis Sports Summit regarding esports. And yeah, it's just been a really great opportunity for me to learn too.
No, that's great. What we'll do is we'll sort your appearance fee out for this podcast afterwards. obviously sort after.
Of course.
So both for my own knowledge and for my listeners, what was kind of the moment where you kind of discovered esports and decided you kind of wanted to work within it? They could be two separate times without a doubt, but yeah, what was kind of the moment where you discovered whatever it is that's happening right now?
Totally. Well, honestly, for me, it's kind of been a 10-year journey. Really starting in college, I went to the University of Washington, go Dogs, and I, discovered YouTube, gaming, and just this whole culture that was starting to grow online. And I started to become part of that culture, grew up in that through college, but wanted to be a lawyer. So I studied international studies. I got a couple of different minors, one in human rights, another one in law, societies, and justice. So I went to work as a kind of legal assistant, paralegal work in immigration law for a couple of years after college, and realized that's really tough work, especially in the U.S. So I was kind of like, all right, I don't know if this is the right career path for me. I really need to change this. Gaming is really fun. It's a hobby for me at the time. It was a hobby for me at the time. So I just made a full career change, gave up working in law for a little while at least, worked as a barista and started streaming on my own. I streamed on Twitch for just about a year, any variety of games, really just to learn how it works. Mm-hmm. And participated in the culture in a variety of ways. I wrote articles, did a little bit of cosplay, and then made the jump to move down to LA and got my first job working in esports with Ryan Morrison, with Morrison Rothman. Yeah, so that was my first job in esports. That was kind of that the way that I could combine my past work in legal with getting into esports, kind of breaking into esports. Before that, I'd managed social media on a contract basis for a couple of games-oriented companies, so I didn't have a ton of experience. But Ryan was really instrumental in kind of, showing me the ropes and teaching me a ton about esports with a legal context. And then so from there, I was just, you know, I was already in it. I was enjoying esports so much that I just set my career path from there.
No, that sounds great. It's always interesting to kind of hear how people discover things. A lot of people are now coming over from the sports side, obviously jumping ship from traditional sports, but then there are obviously the people who kind of grew up around games and it's just kind of natural development. Or there's people like me who just kind of stumbled into it and that was that. So on the sponsorship front, obviously working at Esports Insider, I kind of report on the day-to-day happenings of what's going on, and sponsorships and partnerships are a huge part of the ecosystem as a whole, perhaps too much in terms of revenue, but we'll get to that later on. And what one big part of a lot of sponsorships we see between, say, a typical brand and a team or an organization is like the identity of such sponsor being emblazoned everywhere. So you'll see it on their website, you'll see it on social media, but you also see it on stream quite often. So do you think sponsorship is being measured as well as it could be? Because on our end, for example, we don't really get to see the results of said sponsorship or how it's actually measured. So we've got kind mm-hmm. of no insight as to what goes on there. So if you could speak a little bit about how you measure said sponsorships, that would be great as well.
Sure. So I can speak just within the context of GumGum, how we, you know, do our analysis and how we understand measurement. So really, it's a combination of things. We like to really go for accuracy and granularity with our data and our technology. So we're able to report on everything from, you know, the number of exposures, the number of times, say, Honda comes up in a Team Liquid content piece, or Totino's comes up on a 100 Thieves jersey during an esports tournament, for example. So we're able to collect those, that quantitative data. We're able to collect those impressions, you know, being able to understand those numbers, you know, those numerical pieces that brands are really interested in. But then also on the other side of that, you know, the insights, you know, the qualitative understanding, you know, what was the sentiment around this this activation, for example? You know, were comments generally good? And then just overall, what can we gather from the data that we collected? So what can we understand about an activation? Maybe the impressions were really high, but the engagements were really low. So maybe people weren't really engaging that much with the content as much as the brand wanted to. So really, it's looking holistically at an activation and seeing, you know, what was the reaction from the audiences, what was the feedback, and how can that be applied in the future.
Okay, so would you say that the current climate, say perhaps outside of GumGum, it'd be hard for you to say, but do you think like enough measurement is being done of these partners, partnerships and sponsorships? Because obviously the word on the street now among marketing directors and such is, okay, you need to get into esports. They've got the most ideal demographic for so many different industries and companies, but then that's it. This kind of slap their name, their brand on something, and that's that. Do you think?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So what's your kind of thoughts on that?
Totally. Measurement is more important now than ever. And it is important for everyone to be critical of sponsorships in esports. It is a young industry, and we have the advantage of having data to be able to educate us so that we can make decisions faster. Traditional sports doesn't have that, or didn't have that traditionally. So we have this advantage. We have this opportunity to be able to make smarter decisions. And brands, they look at this space, you know, they probably have some perceptions about us. Maybe they have a dedicated esports marketing person, and maybe they're considering esports in their marketing budget. Maybe they aren't at all. Maybe they have, you know, no conception. So really, it's important for, you know, measurement accuracy and understanding, you know, benchmarking. How can, you know, it's obviously very difficult to compare esports to traditional sports in any sense, but having any kind of benchmark or understanding of how well is this brand performing in this space is extremely valuable and will help especially non-endemic brands be willing to spend more in the future.
Okay, from your experience, I guess, working with them, are you seeing a lot of the big teams getting involved, or is it more the tournament organizers getting involved in the measurement of such sponsorships, or is it kind of a well-rounded client base? I guess hopefully it's well-rounded, but I imagine it's not necessarily perfect just yet.
Sure. Well, the great thing about measurement is really it's coming from also the traditional sports space. So a lot of traditional sports teams are also doing this measurement for their sponsorships, you know, across, you know, using U.S. examples, MLB, NBA, NFL, they're all using some kind of measurement to be able to understand the success of their activations. And then esports is following suit, you know, just understanding from that traditional realm. And then brands want to see that connectivity as well. So they want to see, you know, maybe they activated with an MLB, a Major League Baseball team, and they wanted to compare that to, you know, the same amount that they spent activating in esports. So even though they are so different contextually, being able to see, okay, on a granular level, how did these two activations perform is something that is absolutely necessary for brands.
Without a doubt. So with all of this in mind, which sponsors are doing it the best at the moment, in your opinion, in esports?
Well, that's a great question. And I'm going to answer that with a little story. So I got to go to TwitchCon this year down in San Diego. And there was a wonderful activation by 100 Thieves. They had a party with Totino's.
Yeah.
And it was the Little Dicky. They had a Little Dicky concert. It was the Totino's activation party. And, you know, at first I was thinking, you know, oh, you know, whatever, it's a concert put on by Totino's. And then after the concert, everybody's, you know, wasted, having fun, listening to Little Dicky. And then they had the waiters come out in the red tuxes, serving up hot, fresh Totino's to everyone there. And, you know, when you're drunk and you're hungry,
there's nothing better.
And you need to eat, there is nothing better than pizza rolls. So, you know, I just gravitated over to one of these waiters and was just scarfing down Totino's. But there is, I haven't seen a better way of getting your direct audience to eat and consume your product better than that this year. I love that. But really, especially in the content realm, I'm seeing a lot of creativity. There's some really sleek advertisements out right now. I'm loving the one Team Liquid is doing with Honda. It's been on Twitter, Twitch a lot right now.
Yeah.
But just the creativity in general that I've been seeing with brand activations is great. And it tells me also that those brands are willing to take risks.
Okay. Now, on a personal level, I'm a Lil Dicky fan. It always sounds a tiny bit strange to say that, but I'm a fan of Dave Bird's musical persona and the music he creates. On a personal level, I would also kind of say, yeah, that's up there for me. But sticking on 100 Thieves, because obviously they're kind of almost the buzzword when it comes to organizations right now, that they're the gold standard by many people's kind of acclaim as such. So they've obviously just announced the Cash App Compound at the time of recording. This has literally just been announced like a day or two ago. And that's some incredible exposure, right, for anybody driving by. Like, Cash App is obviously have to have paid a shit ton for that. But you have to imagine that that will pay off just for people wanting to go and see the facility when they're in the kind of area. And then Totino's have also kind of activated their partnership with 100 Thieves through sponsored game clips and such, and like answering questions post-tournaments. And then also there's Rocket Mortgage, who've sponsored kind of rooms. It was first off within the like the practice house for the league team, and now within the compound as well. So do you think 100 Thieves are doing well all around when it comes to their partners, or is it more specifically just with Totino's?
I'm loving what they're doing with their partners. Even further than that, something that I've been noticing that they've been really well is YouTube content series. They've been really getting creative and experimenting with podcasts, loot series, you know, like all of these different ways of activating their partners, you know, outside of esports. Something that I've noticed about 100 Thieves as an organization is they're really, you know, leaning into that content creator side that's getting really popular, especially in LA right now. So I'm loving just the sleek activations, like the Cash App, Nate Shot, and Courage and Nate Shot show.
Yeah.
That I think is a really excellent way to just go ahead and integrate. But it seems like, you know, just the brands that they have, they don't have a ton of sponsors. They don't need to plaster their jersey with, you know, 50 different sponsors to be able to have meaningful activations with them. And that's why it seems like to me, Cash App would be willing to put their name on a building with 100 Thieves because they have that confidence.
Okay, that makes sense. And I kind of piggybacking off of the point that you made about them not having too many sponsors, we do see, I can't think of exact examples right now, but I guess like your Fnatics and your Liquids have got 1,700 partners, so the amount of deliverables there, I should say, sorry, is absolutely crazy. But the kind of sponsors we see the most are like, or partners as well, like gaming chair brands. Like, that's a very typical thing we see, and it's just, it feels so uninspired. More and more now, we're getting more creative, like Kit Kat with LEC earlier. That was announced earlier today, where whenever there's a technical fault and like the broadcast is interrupted and the games are interrupted, there'll be a Kit Kat advertisement, which is absolutely crazy to me. I don't think it's good to actually bank on the fact that there will be downtime, you know, but yeah, when it comes to all these very standard things, so you get like your peripheral sponsors and you get your chair sponsors and such, what do you think about those as a whole? Because I myself find them pretty uninspired. They're very standard now. It's maybe only because they're so standard that I'm kind of bored by them, but you never really see anything amazing come from the kind of standard partnerships and sponsorships, though they may be necessary to keeping everything afloat.
I think just in terms of peripherals, one activation that I've seen go really well has been the HyperX with, I think, Pokimane, like Post Malone, a group of really select influencers. And I think from what I've, you know, seen and heard from a lot of peripheral companies and the strategy that they're taking, they're wanting to take probably a more influencer-based approach. So, you know, maybe not plastering, you know, all chairs, all headsets have to be one brand, but zeroing in on one particular influencer and saying, you know, this person is performing so much with our brand, you know, also Gordon Hayward doing a little crossover into NBA and being able to cross over into those audiences as well, who might not even necessarily be gaming audience yet. So being able to look maybe inside and outside of the culture and looking at the individual personalities, I think might be kind of the next move for a lot of companies in that position.
Okay, so you've touched upon HyperX there with Pokimane and such, and this is a topic I've discussed with people quite a lot, actually. What tends to happen in esports quite a lot, rightly or wrongly, I don't know. I've got my own opinions, other people have got conflicting ones, where banding in such influencers and streamers in with esports to make it seem like it's perhaps in a better place than what it is, especially when it comes to like viewership metrics and having Ninja on ESPN and Ellen and all the Jimmies. I don't know all the names. I'm English. I don't watch those. But you know what I mean? Like, so banding them in with esports to make esports an even more attractive proposition to a lot of people and a lot of companies and such. Like, for example, I'll give a more practical example as well. Esports Insider, the website, the publication that I'm the editor of, we do not cover, say, Courage doing anything.
Right.
He's not really mm-hmm. esports now. When he was a host and occasional caster, sure, yeah, okay, I can understand that there is part of the whole ecosystem as a such, and also Pokimane, for example, like, not really going to do anything
for us.
She's
not an esports player.
No,
yeah.
So, but the two are conflated together, but then it doesn't help when you've got, say, 100 Thieves with your Valkyries and your Courages and such, and Nature kind of teeters the edge. He's firmly within both, so that's like quite a unique position. But what do you think about the whole banding together? Also, another one, like content creators at the Esports Awards, like Minilad winning something at the Esports Awards when he's got nothing to do with it. It makes no sense to me. I don't understand it, and I'm on a quest to understand whether I'm just too close-minded and too gatekeeper-ish, or if there should be a distinction made. So I'd love to get your take on that, really.
Well, I definitely have some opinions on that. And I just, my opinion, look at the esports organizations and who they're drafting on their rosters, and I think that'll tell a pretty telling story. The organizations see a ton of value in these influencers, and that's why they're wanting to bring them in. Us as an industry, I think we would be shooting ourselves in the foot if we didn't, you know, include these groups, these content creators, because there is a lot of crossover. I mean, Ninja used to be a pro Halo player, did he not?
He did, yeah.
So, I mean, there is absolutely opportunity for people who are professional players to cross into that influencer space and, you know, bring a ton of benefit. I'm a huge believer that rising tides raise all boats or sails or whatever that saying is.
I get you.
Um, But I mean, bringing in that interest, you know, if somebody who could be a Ninja fan may not have even realized that he was a pro Halo player, realized that, and then, you know, this young kid realizing at a young age because of Ninja what esports is, could have become, could become the next generation of fan. So, you know, something that I tweeted about recently was comparing, you know, the length of time esports has been considered, you know, a franchise professional thing in the United States,
yeah,
to other professional sports leagues. And esports has only been around for in a professional sense in the US for maybe 20 years, as compared to maybe Major League Baseball, which has been around for 151 years. So, you know, it takes those generations and generations and decades to develop those fan bases. And sometimes, you know, we might need to open our minds and, you know, open ourselves to bringing in outside influence, bringing in celebrities, to be able to grow ourselves as an industry. I mean, Michael Jordan was in, you know, commercials and everything. And I mean, Space Jam happened, right?
Right. I hate it when people come back with compelling arguments. I hate it. I hate it when I don't seem right. Oh, I know what you're saying. I don't know. I don't like the idea of, say, a football player streaming. Maybe it's part of an activation with HyperX, for example, because they are kind of branching out, as you say, into different realms as such. And then them saying in like they're inherently part of esports, or people banding those together. I don't know. Something about it doesn't quite sit right with me. But then I do understand that the more and more we're seeing the likes of 100 Thieves and FaZe and such blurring the lines by having both. And yeah, I understand how that kind of makes it even harder for me to even deny the fact that it is somewhat part of it. And also the fact that streaming and such is, and content creation is like the esports graveyard. You either become a caster, a coach, or you just go and stream to like a few hundred people and make a decent enough living and play whatever game you want. So it's even then that seems to be a little bit of a crossover, which I hadn't really thought about too much because no one had brought forward a compelling argument against it until now. So I'm really annoyed with you for that. But no, that's fair enough. So a lot of organizations, there's a lot of talk going on now with all the CSGO franchise leagues going on, the CDLs launching and such, about revenue and actually being sustainable and being able to make enough money to keep afloat for the long term and actually become profitable at some point. Because as far as I'm aware, there's either one or there's zero profitable organizations. I think it's zero, but I did hear at one point there was one or two. But I wholeheartedly disagree with it, and no one can give me any evidence of it. So nobody's making any money. ESL and MTG, its parent company, pissing money at the moment, kind of off the back of the Huya deal, but also in general, like, and sponsors are what's keeping it afloat. If Intel wasn't there to help ESL out, I'm not sure it would be here right now. So what do you think about the whole state of the reliance on sponsors and sponsorships and partners, I guess, to keep everything afloat? It's not healthy, right?
Well, just to speak on that, I read a statistic in Newzoo that states about 82% of global revenue streams for esports come from sponsorships. That's mm-hmm. a lot.
Exactly, yeah. So I don't have the number at hand, but yeah, it's mad.
It's, you know, the monetization question is a really big question, obviously, in esports right now. And even on a grander scale, digital marketing, mm-hmm. because, you know, what is esports but a form of digital marketing? It lives in the digital realm. It's a way for these brands to advertise in a digital sense. So, you know, there's obviously a ton of questions going around there. And it's really up to these teams, leagues, and so forth to really see the reality of the industry as it stands right now. Newzoo also quoted that the global revenue stream, that total revenue is up 34% from 2018. So that need for sponsorships is only growing further and further. So how are these companies preparing? How are these companies planning long-term to monetize? Or do they have an alternative way to monetize that doesn't need sponsors? And are we going to see, you know, some new ideas and new ways flourish from other teams or groups who don't want to take that traditional route? I think this is going to be a trial and fail period to be able to see.
I agree. And for the fans of esports that are inevitably going to listen to this and tell us that prize money is the key to all of this, no. Like, if you, like, the majority of prize money, if not all of it, goes to the players. The teams are cut out entirely. And as mm-hmm. I've I've seen a few player contracts that go against that, but I've seen some that go with it. So, but they were on a smaller scale. So I actually put out a report a couple months ago about a contract and exposing some of the kind of exploitative terms within that. And one of them was them one of the terms was taking, I think, like 80% of the prize pool. So like they were paying like $500 a month for this player, I think it was, and then taking basically everything that they earn as well. So it's that's not a sustainable way anyway to be running your business off of prize pools, even if you were taking a lot of that home, but you're not. So exactly, new methods are needed. I think that's across all digital media, as you say, like digital marketing, but like the media landscape as well as a whole, like publications and news and such. Like it's not sustainable as it is either, especially in esports, but across the whole landscape. So yeah, there's a lot to work out, but I think we're in a better position than traditional sports, for example, to figure that out first. And I guess we've got more of a need to figure that out first than them as well.
And the numbers reflect that too.
Reflect what? What's your numbers? I'd love to hear a bit more about that.
Yeah, I can dive. Just traditional sports, there's a lot of talk in the United States about viewership, broadcast viewership, especially for a lot of traditional sports, NFL, MLB, especially NHL, very much so, dropping and declining every year. So viewership for a lot of these traditional sports is shifting away. Their fan base is growing older. So, you know, young people are not as interested. They may not be able to afford to go to the games, or they just be more into gaming or into the culture. So the numbers don't lie that as our generation grows and matures and grows, you know, becomes more interested in gaming, gaming and esports are on the rise, especially in the US.
And what you also see is, as well, just to further prove that, is the likes of the E-Premier League, the EMLS, the E-World Cup, the E-Champions League, blah, 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 blah. Like, and then there's all the Madden thing going on at the moment, is the NBA 2K League. Like, these traditional sports leagues that are worrying about losing everything that they have are trying to move over to esports. I wouldn't say anyone's particularly done it too well yet. Some people argue the NBA 2K League's doing decently, but I mean, the structure could be performing well and could be doing what it needs to do, but like the viewership isn't there and the interest isn't there. So especially when we see these bold fucking entrepreneurs saying like in 20 years an NBA 2K league player will earn more than the top NBA player, that's a crazy statement. But like, we are seeing these leagues desperately coming over to esports, which is strange considering we're not really set up for success yet either, but it just shows that they're kind of floundering and worried as much as we are.
Oh yeah, totally. Just candidly, I've been engaged in conversations personally with people in some of these leagues, and they have given me and asked me questions like, literally, like the South Park episode, how do I reach these kids? And just asking, you know, how do I reach the esports audience? And it's like, you know, it's not that easy. You can't just take your brand, go into esports and say, okay, I'm part of this now. The community is born from such a unique place and has grown from such a unique place that, you know, it's in a league of its own. And if these leagues want to keep up, they're going to have to be either updating their own structures and their own marketing or starting to listen to what we do.
No, I agree. And one thing I kind of noticed, so the Call of Duty League, which is the new franchised league set up around the Call of Duty like gaming franchise, which is huge within its own right, though the esports side has never really caught up or stayed parallel to that. That league announced its the set of partners for the inaugural season very recently at the time of recording this. So it includes Mountain Dew, Amp Game Fuel, which is a horribly long name and not a very good sponsorship name at all, and they don't activate particularly well. And then, of course, we've got Scuff Gaming, very standard things there, maybe a couple of content series out of that, but you're not going to get too much more. Then there's the US Air Force. Like, we're seeing the forces coming into esports more and more now. They're invading our industry to recruit our gamers. You know what I mean? It's wild.
The US Air Force sponsored Cloud9 for a period, I think.
Their CSGO team exclusively, yeah.
Yeah, yep,
but
exactly.
Then there's the Marines and stuff as well that are involved. It's wild at the moment.
How do we reach these kids, right?
Yeah, but like, it's outrageous. But it just shows that the potential power of esports, right, as well, from different angles. But what I was getting at with the CDL is just like it's very samey. It's like as both that I guess they want to create like a homey feeling for people who go to these events and see the same kind of activations and sponsors that have always been there. But also then it just feels kind of uninspired, like they're not bringing too much more to the table. Like content series are only good if you can actually create compelling content, and the teams such as Chicago Huntsmen, led by Hex, do a much better job than the leagues typically do, you know. So I'm not very positive on that, and I guess there's one league that I think's doing well in sponsorships or like excelling, and that is the LEC.
Absolutely.
Would you say that's the standout competition at the moment in esports in terms of sponsorships?
And I'll just say the way these succeeding, for like the LEC, for example, another league that I'm personally really excited about is Face It and Counter-Strike. And what I'm seeing in the content that they are putting out, the content is funny, it's engaging, it's directly, you know, connected to, you know, the matches and everything itself. And these leagues are not afraid to take risks. They're not afraid to make jokes. They're not afraid to, you know, lean into the personalities of their casters and trust their talent to entertain. I love that. And the audiences are loving that. And I would love for nothing more for the CDL to succeed. And I want to see, you know, a lot of success happening there, but I want to see trust. I want to see trust in the fan base, and I want to see trust in the creativity that goes into making that league unique.
Okay, that's an interesting thing. I'm a Call of Duty guy myself. That's how I discovered esports back, like, 12 years ago now. I feel old. Yeah, so like from on a personal level, I want to see it succeed. On like a professional level, like my job is to kind of scrutinize and figure stuff out behind the scenes, right, and then bring that forward. Like nothing I've seen too far is particularly inspiring, besides the fact that Activision Blizzard once again have got a group of 12 rich people to fork out like $25 million for a spot. That's the only positive thing I've seen so far. That is the time of recording this. The weekend coming up is going to be the first real test. That's when Minnesota Rocker hosts the launch weekend, and already there's problems before it even started. So I don't know how happy the sponsors will be, never mind the ownership groups that have actually forked out all of that money. But what I want to kind of go into a little bit, because we'll go back more into the stuff you do day to day, I assume. What do you think, like, the missed opportunities when it comes to streaming and sponsors and such? Are there any, or is it done perfectly at the moment?
There are always opportunities to be branding further. And some teams and organizations I see doing this really well, and others could be doing it a lot more. Just in terms of best practices and including sponsored content or sponsors in your content, really being mindful. I watch esports content and I see these teams sponsored by these really high tier, amazing brands. And I'm thinking there's opportunities here, 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 and here to have put, you know, a beverage, a product placement, or, you know, integrating the brand in a very clean, subtle way that isn't distracting from the content, or, you know, is a player saying buy this, right? Mm-hmm. So using, you know, mindful placements. I'd like to give a shout out to a brand who is doing this really well is Red Bull, and just pretty across the board with all of their partnerships. And I actually used to work for Tempo Storm, which was sponsored by Red Bull, is sponsored by Red Bull. And I did a little social media work for them, and their whole thing is organic, natural placement for the brand and incorporating it in a natural way. So drinking Red Bull, wearing cool apparel that has Red Bull on it, Ninja and his scarf. So really taking advantage and utilizing basically everything around you to be able to activate that brand.
Okay. Did Red Bull sponsor Ninja's New Year's thing that happened?
Yeah, well, Ninja and Red Bull have been doing a ton. I mean, him, Red Bull scarf, I mean, I couldn't even imagine how much that scarf placement alone is worth across everything.
Yeah, Yeah, I just no, you are right. Like they're doing some great things. I've seen a lot of those, and obviously they're involved with like Big and Ents, for example. There was a whole joke around Alu, the CS:GO player for Ents, and mm-hmm. him and Red Bull, and the fact they leaned into that even with like the announcement video. Like it shows that they know what they're on about, and they're doing things the right way.
And Vitality as well.
Of course, yeah. And there are others. I think there are one or two more as well that. I think 100 Thieves were sponsored by them, and I went on their website the other day, and Red Bull was still listed as a partner, but they just updated their website, so I'm not sure if that's actually still going on or if it's an old version of that page. I don't know. I should actually dig into that. That's a story. There are a couple of others, and obviously they run their own events and such as well. But I remember on Ninja's New Year's thing, wherever he was at Times Square, perhaps he's like trying to get everybody to do the floss at the same time. I never watched it, but I saw that bit there, and I cringed so bad. I was like,
"Oh yeah."
Would that be a good thing for Red Bull though? Like, because that obviously is very shareable. That's like viral content. And if their branding's a part of that, is that kind of thing still a good look for a sponsor, or is it just like, "Oh Jesus, what's this?"
Well, I mean, it's funny and memorable and memeable. Terrible, but it's not bad for the brand. It's not putting brand safety in jeopardy by any means. It's not any kind of violence or inappropriate content that's going to reflect badly on Red Bull. It's a joke. It's funny, you know. I saw recently they released that ninja skin in Fortnite, and someone made a meme video recreating that Times Square thing in Fortnite, and that's hilarious. And, you know, people remember that about Ninja. They remember that, you know, he had that hilarious moment, but then they can also connect that back to Red Bull and say, you know, this brand can take a joke. I like that, so maybe I'll have a Red Bull.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm cringing now even thinking about it. So one aspect of sponsorships we haven't really seen in esports are companies actually activating within the games. So yeah. I know like Champion had its own kit in the NBA 2K League, but I'm thinking like I don't know, I can't think of a racing game. Forza, for example, it's not really the best esport in my opinion, but like having banners around the circuit, for example, with like the brands, right. So they're activating both digitally in that way, as well as the physical activations and whatever they do on the social media and such. And I think some funding went into, is it Anzu, it may be called? I reported on it before, but it's a long time ago now, where they actually do those kind of integrations. Do you think that's a massive opportunity for the future of esports sponsorship?
Oh, absolutely. Well, we've been seeing it already happening with Dota. We've already been seeing team logos integrated on those banners along with the sponsorship. So it's been happening already. I've been seeing it across the board also with Counter-Strike. I believe Blast Pro Series last year had some little sprays integrated into the game.
Okay.
So I definitely have some thoughts on how to do this, you know, mindfully. There are some games to where it would make a lot more sense contextually, be a little more appropriate, you know, your more realistic games, or realistic in style. So CSGO, maybe Call of Duty, you know, where there isn't really that fantasy element that's separating us from the realm of reality. So to me, doing that in Overwatch might be a little more difficult. Being able to pull people out of that kind of fantasy realm that they want to be in, or even League of Legends would be even more difficult, right? Mm-hmm. Being able to take a State Farm logo and put it inside League of Legends is probably something Riot is considering, but it's difficult because it's taking people out of the rift. So per game, it's a very contextual thing, very different by game, but I just really don't think that these publishers and these producers should be afraid to experiment and also, you know, maybe change up a couple of aspects of the game to be able to fit these sponsors and make more of a lasting impact than they think. Mm-hmm. And then just to kind of go back to a thought on brands activating with someone or something that might not, the activation might not go as planned. It might become a joke. People might laugh. Impressions are impressions, and negative impressions are not good, but also, you know, those impression numbers do matter. And that is something, you know, that brands do look at. If you have the opportunity to make that brand go viral, that is something that they will remember.
Okay, that's so many ways to do that, thinking about that. So many, like, you could just create an absolute shit show on purpose. I'm yet to see a sponsorship that does that, where they come in and just absolutely make things like look like a botch job, but it's on purpose just to get that kind of virality, you know? But yeah,
Oh, I'm not advocating for that. You know, don't put out BS and try to, you know, get terrible impressions and say that it's good. But if you are able to make a piece of content go viral, even if it is funny, even if it is, you know, becomes a meme, that is the success.
okay. Yeah, that's fair enough. That makes more sense than what I wasn't advocating for it either. I must say, not that I've got too much influence in that stuff. But so what I'm starting to see more recently is, say, like G Fuel calling itself the official energy drink of esports, and Bud Light is expanding its presence, and it filed for a trademark last year, I believe, for official beer of esports. What's your take on that? Because I'm like, nah, you're only the official. Well, you can never be the official beer unless esports, which isn't an entity, signs that naming right over, you know, unless you become the title sponsor of it, it's not going to happen. So do you think it's just a shit marketing ploy? Do you think it's a good one? Like, where do you stand on that?
It's like they can be the official. All the official beer of hockey, and it's like, all right, is your fan base, half your fan base, even old enough to drink yet? Like,
Nah, and would they drink
all
Bud
right, if you
Light?
want to be the, and would they drink? So, I mean, it's definitely a ploy. It's a safe play that they've done in other traditional sports before, and that's what's interesting. You're seeing brands come in that have activated traditionally in other sports, is they're using a lot of the same plays. They're using a lot of the same kind of activation ideas, the official beer of esports, the official whatever of esports, and they're throwing it against the wall to see how it sticks. And we're in, you know, some say premature, I say maturing stage of esports, to where we can actually throw these things at the wall and see how it sticks. But I don't think we should expect the same results from traditional marketing ideas. So if they want to take that shot and see if it does anything for them, maybe the numbers will prove me wrong. But I just really think that these brands, if they want to be activating in a new space, need to be thinking more outside the box.
No, I agree. And as we get towards the end of the episode, because unfortunately real jobs do exist, one day it will change that, I'm sure. But what would you like the future of esports sponsorships to look like? Like, are there any like prime examples that you think everyone should look at and go, that's the one? Like, or do you think we haven't quite reached the kind of the peak of where we're going to be? Or are there any kind of missed opportunities or that you can think of that we haven't mentioned yet, like say like the in-game advertisements and stuff? Like, where do you see it all going?
Well, for me, just what to me feels like where we're moving in terms of success is brick and mortar establishments, creating other revenue streams like traditional sports. I'm not saying be like traditional sports, but creating other revenue streams outside of sponsorships that help foster these sponsorships as well, like Cash App, Compound, or, you know, places that are. Probably a better example would be the LCS studio in Santa Monica, where people can come in person, be part of the action, interact directly probably with these sponsors, and eventually help grow the esports industry so that our necessity for these sponsors is not so great.
Okay, no, that makes sense. Like early today, actually, like Verizon, is that how you pronounce it? We don't have that over here. Verizon and Dignitas opening like a joint like 5G network there, and it's the naming rights of Verizon. Like, I don't know how many people are going to go to that, but like when 100 Thief starts its retail kind of big retail push in February, I believe it is. Like, yeah, exactly. Like, everyone's going to go there and be able to see the Cash App compound, and who knows, there may be some additional activations around that. Like, Totino's could be there handing stuff out to people in line, for example,
Exactly.
you know. So I'm going to ring 100 Thieves after this and tell them I've got a brilliant idea and I only want 50% of the revenue. But no,
Awesome.
I 100% agree with what you're saying. It's been good to have you on. With this podcast, what I'm trying to do is speak to people from all corners of the industry. And yeah, when I thought, okay, like sponsorships, like you are 100% the first person I thought of. So partly because of the public speaking thing, you know, like esports is full of people, not full of, but comprised of quite a few people who are quite awkward and come from like I'm going to sit in my room all day and play games standpoint. So to get somebody who works in it day to day, not necessarily from the team side, because that's when you're going to get kind of the biases, you know, but somebody who works in it day to day, kind of independently from any particular organization or huge name within the industry, it's great. So thank you very much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me on. This is great.
Where can people find you online? Where would you like them to be able to find you online? That's probably the better question.
Great. Well, if you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at @IamAnushaGG. I tweet about esports business and really anything else that comes to mind. And on LinkedIn, go ahead and search Tia Smith at GumGum Sports. I'm an esports account manager. If you have any questions about GumGum and what we do, please feel free to reach out.
There we go. Well, thank you again for taking the time, and thank you to everybody who's actually listened for taking the time as well. Same time next week, Tuesday afternoon-ish if you're in the UK, Tuesday morning-ish if you're in the US, and if you're anywhere else and you're probably not listening. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you for your time, and I'll see you on the next one.